Britain's old-time radio. We have the cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab some borax, and enjoy this episode of Dragnet, entitled 16 Jewel Thieves.
Here is another in NBC's great parade of new shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to burglary detail. A sudden wave of jewel thefts is sweeping the city. In 16 days, 16 burglaries have been committed, one each night. They bear the same trademark. Thousands of dollars of jewels are missing. The thief is a master at his trade. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Tuesday, June 17th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of burglary. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way into work that morning, and it was 7:53 a.m. when I got to room 45, burglary detail.
Hi, Joe.
How are you, Walker?
Gonna be a scorcher out today.
Yeah, just like yesterday. Ben in yet?
I think he's over in communications picking up the mail.
Thanks.
You guys been busy?
Yeah, kind of. Jewel thefts.
Anything big?
No big hauls, but he's consistent. 16 nights in a row.
Same guy?
Think so. Same M.O.
Yeah, everybody's got troubles. Gotta check some records. See you later, Joe.
Okay, Willie. Burglary, Friday. Yeah. Okay, Mike, as soon as Ben gets back. He's picking up the mail. Right. Bye.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Ben. Hannon just called. Chief wants to see us.
Take a look at these first.
What do you got, overnight reports?
Yeah, these two.
Yeah.
Two of them.
Three diamond rings, one sapphire, one necklace, jade. Big haul.
Look at the other one.
Ladies' watch, diamond band, emerald bracelet, tourmaline brooch. What's tourmaline, Ben?
I don't know. Must be valuable. It's gone.
Let's see. Owner left house about 9 p.m., returned about 1:30 a.m., found property gone, scratches on the door.
Probably using the cellophane method. Hasn't missed yet.
Two in one night. Well, he's picking up his pace.
Must have a bag full of loot somewhere, whoever it is. You get the description sheet from pawn shop detail?
Yeah, I got them right here. You take half of them. Let's see what luck we got this morning. Nothing so far.
Me neither. Let's see. I'll get it, Joe. Burglar Romero.
Hi, Ben. Chief still wants to talk to you, boys. He's got an appointment at 8:30. Wants to see you before you leave.
Okay, Mike. Just checking some buy sheets. Be right in.
Better make it fast. He's in a bad mood this morning.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Backstrand again?
Yeah, he's in a bad mood. Come on. Wonder what's bothering him.
Something's bad. He doesn't blow very often.
Chief of Detective's Office, Hannon. Go ahead in, boys. He's waiting.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, ma'am. I'll connect you.
Friday, Romero, sit down. Wait till I get the phone. Backstrand. Oh, yes, Mrs. Winthrop. Yes, ma'am. We're doing all we can. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, I'll do that. Yes, ma'am. Goodbye.
Got trouble, Ed?
Taxpayer. Mrs. Winthrop. You two ought to remember the name.
We do, Skipper.
10 days ago, somebody lifted $2,000 worth of diamonds from her bedroom while she was at the symphony. Last night, she was hit again. A diamond watch, an emerald bracelet, and some kind of a brooch.
Tourmaline.
I don't care what kind it was. It's gone. What's the pitch?
We just read a report a couple of minutes ago, Skipper. Could be a tie-in with those other 16 jobs.
16 jobs in 16 days. You haven't got a lead on the thief yet?
Nothing shows up. No prints, nothing.
What about the pawn shops?
Nobody's tried to soak any hot stuff as far as we know. We double-checked the detail. We got every hock shop in town on the alert.
Whoever it is, they've got to try to pawn the stuff sometime. Unless they're going to give diamond rings for Christmas presents.
They haven't tried the pawn shops yet, Skipper. We're sure of that.
Look, 16 burglaries in 16 days. Jewels and watches. Good ones. Well, it's got to stop. It's got to stop soon, you understand?
We'll stay right on top of it, Ed. We're doing all we can.
For 2 weeks, I've had half a dozen women calling me every day. Society women. Some of them figure they should get extra treatment.
They're only DR numbers to us, Skipper. They all get the same attention.
I'll try and explain that to some of them. They think you're in on the racket. Maybe you boys would like to take these calls some morning.
No thanks, Ed.
All right, then, let's get some action. Keep the pawn shop operators on their toes and get after every known fence in town. That's all. I've got an appointment.
All right, Ed. Check you later.
Holding a call for you, Ben.
Thank you. Hello. Oh, hi, Max. What? Well, hold it. Be right down. First break, Joe.
What do you got?
Necklace and a watch. Both of them on the stolen property list.
Where?
Henry's Pawn Shop. 5th and Main.
6 minutes later, at 8:25 a.m., Ben and I drove up in front of Henry's Square Deal Pawn Shop. Quick cash, no red tape, watches bought and sold. The proprietor was Max Murphy, an old friend of Ben's.
Well, pal, of all days, it had to happen yesterday. Took the day off and went fishing up at Big Bear. I left my nephew in charge, Harry. A real knothead, that kid.
How do you mean, Max?
Joe, if I told him once, I told him 100 once. Whatever you do, whatever they come in with to Hawk, check it with the list. Check it with the stolen property list. What does he do?
He forgot.
Oh, a real knothead, that boy.
How old is he, Max?
32. A real knothead. I checked the slips from yesterday. Then I checked the stolen property list. There it is. Hot stuff.
When did the stuff come in, Max, do you know?
About 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Can we look at it?
Oh, sure. Back here behind the car. There it is.
Did you check out the serial numbers on the watch yet, Max?
When I found out, yes. They matched to a T.
All right, let's see. Yeah. Description on this necklace matches, too. Let's have a look at your buy book, huh, Max?
Yes, sir, Joe. Here you are. There's a deal right there.
Here?
Yeah, that's him. That's how he gave his name.
Walter Tracy, 132 and a half Blackstone Court, Los Angeles.
Let me check the book for the description, man.
Oh, sure. Yeah, here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Max, thanks. We'll be checking with you later.
Sure, Joe. Anytime. Sorry.
All right, Max. See you later.
You fellas take it easy.
Right. Want to check and see if we're clear, Joe?
Yeah, I will. 80K to Control 1. 80K to Control 1. Are we clear?
Control 1 to 80K. Stand by.
Good lead, Joe. Got a description in here.
Yeah, it's too bad Max's nephew had to slip up.
Control 1 to 80K. Call your office immediately. Call your office immediately. KMA 367.
Wonder what that's about.
No, no. Call in.
You got some change?
I'll use Max's phone. Use your phone a minute, Mac.
Oh, you, Ben? Sure, help yourself.
Thank you.
City Hall.
2524.
Burglary, Levine.
This is Ben, George. You got something?
Hot one. Universal Loan Shop, 6th and Barton Place. Guy just took in a couple of rings. He checked too late.
What you mean?
He checked the form after the guy left. It was signed Walter Tracy.
There they are, Sergeant. Both rings. Fine quality diamonds.
Don't you usually check your stolen goods list before you take in stuff like this?
Usually, yes. Last night, no. I don't know what I was thinking about.
Can we have a look at your buy book?
Right here. There it is. Walter Tracy. 699 Olive Street. 145 pounds, 5'9", dark hair, build, thin.
We'll have to slap a hold on these rings.
I know, I should have thought.
Can you think of anything else that might help us to identify the man?
Well, no. Had a light suit on. Nice cut. Very well dressed.
Thank you, that's all for now. Here's a card.
If the guy happens to drop back, give us a call, will you?
Sure will, Sergeant. Say.
Yeah?
I've got some nice watch bands. Yours look gold. Can I interest you?
No, thanks. Some other time. Come on, Ben. That afternoon and the following morning, despite our alert and our warnings, two more pawn shops called in with reports of stolen watches taken in. We checked them out. The serial numbers on the watches matched those on the stolen property list. On the pawn shop account books, the loan was listed under the name Walter Tracy. The addresses were given as number 12 St. Vincent Place and 700 East Flower. The descriptions of the man were the same. Slight build, well-dressed, about 145 pounds, 5 feet 9 inches tall, dark wavy hair. We had the name and description distributed to every pawn shop in Los Angeles and surrounding communities. Through our informants, we checked up on every known fence in the city. For the next two nights, we received no reports of stolen jewels. That made up for the double burglary the night before. On June 19th, the box score read 18 successive nights, 18 successive jewel burglaries. At 3:25 in the afternoon, Ben and I sat down to check over the late incoming reports.
Got anything, Joe?
Not yet, no.
Nothing here. Maybe the guys left town.
Nope. No such luck. Take a look.
That's it, number 19. He may set a record.
Well, he's making monkeys out of us, isn't he? Look, man's watch, lady's watch, Chinese amber necklace, diamond shirt studs, and a bracelet with two large rubies.
He's getting ambitious. How's the value listing?
I see. $1,800. One haul. I'll get it. Burglary Friday. Yeah. What? Yeah. Be right down. Stall him. Let's go, Ben.
Where?
Kaplan's down on East 2nd. Walter Tracy's in there now, trying to hock a gold watch. Ben, cover the door. I'll go to look like I'm shopping around.
Right, but watch your step. We don't know this guy.
Yeah, stay close to the door, huh?
I'm sorry. That's the best we can do on the watch.
Look, Mac, this is gold. 21 jewels.
Well, that's the best I can do.
Drop dead.
Well, it's the best I can do. Don't get sore.
Yeah, sure. See you later.
That's him, Sergeant. Walter Tracy. I stalled him as long as I could.
All right, I'll check back with you later. You spot the guy that just came out?
Yeah, I went up the street.
Let's follow him. Hustle it. You spot him, Ben?
Straight ahead, about 15 yards. He's crossing the street.
Yeah, let's get up a little closer.
We'll lose him, sure, if the light changes.
Come on, run for it. Watch the traffic light.
Yeah. That was close.
He might have spotted us. He's going faster.
Come on, Joe, run.
Yeah. Don't lose him.
Crowd's not helping.
Hey, wait a minute. I bet you're a cop. You're chasing somebody.
All right, let go of my arm, mister. Let go.
Well, you don't have to get tough. Lousy cops think they own the street. I'm going to write the mayor's office.
Come on, Joe. He's running for it.
Yeah, I see him. Watch the signal up ahead.
Hurry, Joe. Almost up to him.
Into the parking lot. Hey, you. Stop.
Look out, Joe. A gun.
Yeah, I see
him. All right. Get away.
All
get
right,
away.
Smart guy.
Nice job.
Yeah. He's too fast for an honest man. Let's take him in. When we got back to headquarters, Walter Tracy was under technical arrest. We took him directly to the interrogation room. We searched him thoroughly. We had him take everything out of his pockets and put it on the table. Then we had him take all the money he had in his wallet, count it out, and hold it in his hand.
What is all this routine?
That's all the money you have on you? $47.17, right?
Yeah.
Okay, keep it in your hand. Ben, shake him down.
All right, Tracy, take off your coat, shirt, tie, and your shoes and socks.
What kind of a pitch is this? I'm no hood.
Take them off.
Two-bit cops. You're not pinning anything on me. I don't care what you do.
Sleeves, pockets, lining. Nothing in the coat, Joe.
Get his shirt.
Take it light with the threads, huh? Costs money.
How about the trousers, Ben?
Let's see. Cuffs, pockets. No. Let me get the belt.
Zipper on the inside of the belt?
No, it's clean. Shoes are okay. All right, Tracy, let's see the soles of your feet.
I hope you don't mind. They're dirty.
Why don't you take a shower? Let's see. All right, Joe, nothing. Put your clothes back on.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, you. What's your name?
Huh?
I said, what's your name?
You telling jokes? Walter Tracy, you know that.
Your real name.
How old are you, Tracy?
27.
Where do you live?
No place. Just got in town a couple of days ago.
Where are you from?
Salina, Kansas.
Where you been sleeping the last two nights?
The park, Pershing Square.
Clothes don't show it. Pretty natty.
I had them pressed.
Where?
Down by the square. I don't remember.
You ever been arrested before?
No.
Where'd you get this gun, Tracy, the one you pulled on us?
I didn't know who you were. Could have been a couple of hoods. You kind of look like it.
Where'd you get the gun?
I won it in a crap game, coming out on the train.
Where'd you get the watch?
Graduation present.
You want to run a make on him, Joe? A gun and a watch?
Yeah, I'll call him.
Go on, check. You can't prove a thing.
Pawn shop records, Gilmore.
Gil, this is Friday. Can you give me a make on a watch?
Sure, Joe, go ahead.
Time Master, yellow gold, man's wristwatch.
Okay.
Case number 716F23.
Right.
Movement number B351708.
Got it.
Okay. Now give me a make on this gun, huh? 32 S&W automatic. Serial number 579461.
Okay.
Call me back?
Right. What's your station number?
2572.
I'll ring you, Joe.
Thanks.
Having fun?
What'd you do with all those jewels you stole?
When do I get out of here?
I don't think you're going to get out.
You got nothing on me.
How tall are you, Tracy?
Get your tape measure. 5'9".
How much you weigh?
140. I'm 27. My name's Walter Tracy. I come from Salina. I've been in town 2 days, and I don't know what you guys are talking about.
You sound smart. You don't act it.
And you're flying blind, copper.
What'd you do with those jewels you stole?
I don't know what you're talking about.
What color are your eyes?
I don't know. I'm colorblind.
What color would you say your hair is?
You colorblind, too?
You ever been arrested before?
Straighten out. He asked me that.
I'm asking you.
No.
You ever done any big time?
No.
All right, I don't care if you level with us or not. We're going to make you on those prowl jobs, all 19 of them.
Sure. You guys are smart.
You got in Los Angeles 2 days ago, is that right?
Yeah.
You don't know anything about any jewel thefts.
That's what I said.
Then how come your name and your handwriting's on the account books in 4 pawn shops in Los Angeles?
Not mine. You can't prove it.
We can, Tracy. Come clean. What'd you do with the stuff you stole from 1250 Moraga Drive, June 5th?
I didn't steal any stuff.
What'd you do with the rings and watches you took from 1400 Placerville Road, June 9th?
I wasn't in town.
What'd you do with the diamond dress pins you stole June 13th, 123 South Van Ness?
Did I do that?
You're not only kinky, you're a bad liar.
You prove it.
Porter, get you a sawbuck. Your prints bounce, Tracy.
Our handwriting man's gone to work on those signatures of yours. You haven't got a chance. Now, come on. Where'd you hide the stuff?
You can't prove a thing.
Where'd you say you've been sleeping the last 2 nights?
In the park, Pershing Square. You want a map?
Clothes sure look nice.
I said I had them pressed.
But you can't remember where.
No, I can't remember where. That a crime?
Friday talking.
Joe, this is Gilmore. Here's the stuff you asked for.
Let's have it, Gil.
No make on the watch, no make on the gun.
Okay, Gil, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
You're in up to your neck.
You said that, didn't you?
You're gonna talk, Tracy.
Kinda tired.
All right, we'll let you sleep on it. Come on, Ben, let's book him.
Right.
I'll get your jobs, coppers.
Sure, come on. We took Walter Tracy to the county jail and had him booked on suspicion of burglary. He was still sullen. We knew we had the guilty man, now we had to prove it. As it often happens, the victims never see the burglar. They only know he's been there. They can't identify him, but they can identify their property. Our job was to find the property. When we did, we'd have Walter Tracy. And the 19 victims would have their property returned. But Tracy wasn't talking, and we knew he'd never talk unless he thought it might help him. We took the problem to Ed Backstrand.
Smart punk, Skipper, but he's done time before.
How do you know?
Tried him out last night when we brought him in. He talks like it and he acts like it.
But he won't cop out. Are you sure?
He won't talk in 100 years. He knows he's got us in a spot.
Well, one thing's sure. We're not going to send him up without finding the loot first. He's planted the stuff somewhere in this city. We've got to find it.
Ben and I have got an idea, Ed. It's not going to be easy, but it might work.
What is it?
Tracy tried to soak some of the stolen property at 4 separate pawn shops in the downtown area.
Yeah?
At each one of those 4 pawn shops, he gave a local address. Now, we're sure he must have a room or an apartment someplace in town.
All right. Where?
That's where guesswork comes in, Skipper. Every one of those addresses he gave falls within a certain area.
How big an area?
You got that street diagram, Joe?
Yeah. Here it is, Ed. From Figueroa here to San Pedro, and from Pico down to First Street. The area is about 12 blocks wide, 14 blocks long.
That's a lot of territory. How are you going to cover it?
On foot. We'll take Tracy with us.
Plenty of legwork. You sure it's the answer?
We've got to find the stuff, and it's the only way we can figure it.
Hotels, apartments, rooming houses. There must be hundreds of places you could stay in that territory. It'll take a couple of weeks.
Yeah, on foot it will.
All right. It's tough, but it's your idea. Go to it.
An hour after we left Chief Backstrand, we got Tracy out of his cell in the county jail and started our canvass of the appointed area. We took the usual precautions and handcuffed Tracy's wrists to our own. We started the search for his hideout at First Street and Figueroa. It was a warm day in Los Angeles. The temperature was 91. After the first 3 hours, I could tell Ben's feet were ready to give out, and so were mine. We couldn't even have the comfort of complaining. That had encouraged Tracy, and he was cocky enough already. He cursed and threatened every step of the way.
My legs off. All right, quit pulling, will you?
Come on, Tracy, up the stairs. Another one to check.
Warm day, Joe.
Yeah, a little.
What do you mean, a little? Must be 110.
Yes, what is it?
You the manager?
Yes.
Could you tell me which apartment this man has in your house, ma'am?
Who, him?
Yes, ma'am, this one.
Never saw him before. He don't live here.
All right, ma'am, thank you.
Yeah, hot, ain't it?
When are you gonna get wise?
Come on, Tracy.
Well, that finishes this side of the street. You want to cross over, Joe?
Yeah, let's go.
I'm hungry. I want to eat.
After we cover the other side of the street.
You can't do this to me. I'm going to get a lawyer. I'll have your jobs, both of you.
Yeah, uh-huh. Come on. We only got a couple of hundred places to go.
Hi, gents. What can I do for you?
You the manager?
I run the place, yeah.
Which room does this man have in your place?
Him? You made a mistake. He doesn't live here.
All right, thanks.
My feet are killing me. Wait till I get a lawyer. I'll burn both of you dumb cops. What do you think you're doing anyway, making a guy work?
All that day and the day after that and the day after that, Ben and I, with Tracy handcuffed to our wrists, canvassed the designated areas from hotel to hotel, from rooming house to rooming house, and the apartments, too. Every day, our feet ached a little more, our pace slowed down, Tracy got more irritable, and the weather got hotter. The second day, it reached a high of 92. The third day, 94. The fourth day, 94. Police regulations say plainclothes officers must wear a coat and necktie on the street at all times. We wore our coats and neckties. The search continued into the fifth day. Our pace got even slower. Ben and I started to lose heart. After a while, we forgot our object was to recover the stolen jewels. All we wanted was to find Tracy's hideout. We knew we were right. We knew Tracy was our man. It was a point of pride. Whether your feet hurt or not, you don't give in to a thief.
Yes? What do you want?
You the landlady here?
I am.
Which apartment does this man have in the building?
Well, none of them. He's not one of my tenants.
Thank you, ma'am. Come on, Tracy.
By the sixth day, all three of us had special pads in our shoes. Our feet ached worse than ever. Tracy let us know about his every 3 minutes. By late afternoon of the sixth day, we'd covered more than half of the designated area. The temperature was 95.
You guys gonna go on forever? I'm sweating like a horse.
I'm getting tired of your moaning.
That looks like the manager behind the desk.
Yes, sir?
You the manager?
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
Can you tell us which room this man has in the hotel?
Him? Mm-hmm. He doesn't live here. Hey, you fellas look awfully warm. Like to cool off in the lobby? We're air conditioned.
No, thanks.
I'm hungry. When do we eat?
You're always hungry.
You got the biggest mouth on a cop I ever saw.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. I want to eat. Now. Wait till I give this story to the papers. Mistreating innocent guys. They'll break you.
All right. Come on, up the stairs.
I'm gonna get a lawyer tonight. I'll show you.
Yes? Why, Mr. Baker, where have you been?
We questioned the landlady, a Miss Elizabeth Hunter. She told us that Baker, alias Tracy, had rented an apartment from her about 2 months before. That's all the information she could give us. Tracy clammed up. He would admit nothing. We asked Miss Hunter to accompany us as a witness. We took the elevator up to Tracy's apartment on the sixth floor. Miss Hunter, Tracy, Ben, and I.
Down this way. Here. Do you want me to open it?
Please, Miss Hunter.
What? There's a girl...
Walter? What is it, Walter?
I told you to get out of town if I didn't come back.
I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave without you.
I thought you slept in the park.
Take a jump.
Where's the stuff hidden?
All right, Ben, handcuff him to a chair. The girl behind him. We'll find the stuff ourselves.
All right, Tracy. All right, you're next.
I haven't done anything either, so you can't prove it.
Billy, shut up.
That's better. No talking between you two. If there is, we'll separate you.
All right, Ben, you take the living room here. I'll try the kitchen. And get a window open. It's hot in here.
All right.
Sergeant, you will be careful of the furniture.
Yes, ma'am.
I had no idea. You, Mr. Baker, of all people.
Don't talk to him, please, ma'am.
Oh, yes.
Tin cop.
Why don't you spell?
Ben, look, it's only the beginning. He's got the stuff scattered seven ways for Sunday. We're going to need help.
In the milk bottle?
Yeah, two rings, three loose diamonds, and this bottle of mayonnaise. We found some kind of a brooch in it. A couple of watches taped to the underside of the kitchen sink.
All right, you. Convinced?
Okay, Ben, call Backstrand. There was a definite possibility that Walter Baker, alias Tracy, had stored some of his stolen loot outside his apartment. We stood little chance of ever recovering it unless we got him to break. Ben called Chief Backstrand, and in 10 minutes he arrived at the apartment with another man from burglary detail, George Levine. Together we went over the four-room apartment foot by foot. We found jewelry, watches, loose stones, in every conceivable place. In cartons of cottage cheese, in jars of cold cream, in the garbage can, everywhere.
Who's your girlfriend? All right, I'll ask her. What's your name? I said, what is your name?
Billy. Billy Crawford. He didn't do anything. He didn't.
All right, Billy. Maybe you can tell us. Where's the rest of the stuff he stole?
He didn't steal. He didn't steal anything.
Billy, shut up.
Keep quiet, you.
Ed, wait a minute.
What?
Just a minute. I want to look over here.
Papers. Taped to the underside of that top drawer.
What is it, Friday?
No, no, you can't. You can't.
Look at these.
All right. You found them. I'll talk.
No, Walter, don't.
These parole papers. He's an ex-con.
Yeah, I'll cop out.
Don't do it, Walter.
Billy, shut up. Dumb dame.
The rest of the stuff, where is it?
On the roof. Inside the ventilator, the one near the front, you'll find a couple of paper bags. That's it.
Levine?
Got it, Chief. I'll check it.
Your papers say you did time in Oregon. What for?
Fell for robbery. Did 5. I owe him 7.
What about the girl?
Walter, I'm going with you.
Her? I don't know. You figure it.
All right, Friday. Romero, take the girl to Lincoln Heights and book her. We'll take him.
Right, Ed. Come on, Ben.
No. No, Walter, I want to go with you.
I'm sorry, ma'am. This way out.
All right, easy, lady.
No, no, wait a minute. Just a minute. Walter?
You're a dumb dame, Billy. So long.
Walter.
All right, come on, let's go. What's the matter? You feel all right?
He lied. He said he loved me. He lied to me.
Don't feel hurt, lady. He lied to everybody.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Walter Baker, alias Walter Tracy, was tried and convicted on 3 counts of first-degree burglary and received the maximum sentence prescribed by law. He is now serving out his term in the state penitentiary. A hold has been placed on him by the state of Oregon, where he will serve out 7 years for violation of parole. Billy Crawford, Baker's accomplice, was tried and convicted of receiving stolen property and is now serving time in the state penitentiary for women. You have just heard the 11th in a new series of authentic cases transcribed from official police files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Warden Clarence A. Larkin of Folsom Prison, Sacramento, who, on the evening of September 24th, 1937, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. If you enjoyed tonight's production of Dragnet, you'll want to listen this Saturday evening to a pair of adventure shows featuring 2 well-known Hollywood personalities. You'll enjoy Brian Donlevy, star of Dangerous Assignment. Also on Saturday's schedule is Richard Diamond, private detective, as played by the screen's romantic tough guy, Dick Powell. Listen to both of these exciting programs this Saturday over most of these same NBC stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. Thank you.
Welcome back to Ricky Jin's old-time radio. Don't look shape, he is sitting there fully exposed again. Snap him with a towel, exile. Now enjoy this episode of X-1, entitled Sam, Is This You?
Blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight's story, Sam, This Is You, by Murray Leinster.
If I were you, I wouldn't believe a word of this story. I'm still not sure if Rosie does, and as a matter of fact, I'm not so sure if I do myself. And that's going some, because it happened to me. And if I can't believe it, well, who can? I suppose it could have happened to anybody, although, on the other hand, maybe it couldn't have happened to nobody. And that's pretty mixed up, so maybe I'd better begin at the beginning. And in this case, that's not so easy as it sounds. For one thing, there's the question of where is the beginning? Well, anyways, I'm Sam Yoder. I'm a telephone lineman for the Batesville and Rappahannock Telephone Company. I got into that line of work because I was in a wire platoon during the war. I've been up more trees in the Ardennes forest in Belgium than anybody, except maybe a couple of squirrels, and they didn't have to string telephone wires. I guess it started because Rosie, she was my girl, Rosie, she thought I lacked ambition.
And also get up and go.
Yeah, anytime you say, honey, except it's one of those jitterbug things and I can't jitter much.
I don't mean dance. I mean stick-to-itiveness.
Now, honey, that's ridiculous. A telephone lineman has more stick-to-itiveness than anybody or he'd fall right off the pole.
Ha. Huh.
Want another drink?
Sam, are you trying to get me drunk?
No. Well, only there's a 350 minimum in this place, and I hate to see it go to waste.
I'm discussing your future, Sam.
Okay.
Do you think a telephone lineman's life is right for you?
Well, has its ups and downs.
Sam.
I'm sorry.
I warned you once more, and I'm going to ask you to take me home, even with a 350 minimum unexpired.
Yeah, okay, honey.
Now, what are you doing to improve yourself?
Nothing, I guess.
Why don't you take one of those correspondence courses? You know, the ones with a picture of Arthur Godfrey, and he says, I was awful in high school arithmetic till I sent in the coupon.
What does he need with high school arithmetic?
It's the principle of the thing. Sam, I'd hate to think I was engaged to a man who didn't improve himself.
Well, I'll figure something out.
You don't want to spend all your life with your arms around a pole.
It was all right with George Sand.
Is he working at the company now?
No. George Sand. She was in...
She?
Yeah, sure, honey. It was a pen name. You see, she was in love with Chopin. You get it?
No.
Well, he was a Pole, you see? Arms around a pole. You get it now?
Yes. Now I get it. Sam, take me home immediately.
She's like that. No sense of humor, know what I mean? But listen, when you climb up and down telephone poles all day, you get tired of something that's straight up and down. Rosie was a refreshing change, you know what I mean? Wow. But she had something. I mean, in the conversation. So I started taking those electronic courses, you know. I'd been at it a couple of months when I asked Rosie to come down to my basement.
I certainly will not.
Well, why not, baby?
Sam Yoder, I'm a respectable girl.
Honey, if I had anything else in mind, would I ask you to leave a nice, comfortable porch swing to go down to a whitewashed concrete basement?
I guess not.
Okay. Come on. I want you to see something.
What?
That's a big surprise. Right here, over on the bench. Take a look.
Sam Yoder, have you been taking Papa's television set apart again?
No, honey, not...
Last time you got the channels mixed up and all Papa could get was Jane Mansfield. Mama had to finally take the fuse out and hide it.
It's not a television set. It's my invention.
Oh. What does it do?
Well, I got the idea at the shop. I was looking at the blueprints of the multiple circuit stuff. You know, how to send 100 messages over the same wire. Well, I got this idea about how to have private conversations on a party line. Actually, I got the idea calling you up with the whole street listening in.
Does it work?
Well, almost. I got a few bugs in this mess of garbage here.
Sam, that's no way to talk.
Well, honey, all the engineers talk that way, and they're college men with fraternity pins.
Well, then I guess it's all right. When will you have this fixed up?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to tinker with it a little. It's just like you, honey.
Sam, you do not have to tinker with me.
Honey, I mean electrically like you. High voltage and a lot of current, but too much resistance. You get it, honey? I mean like an electrical circuit? Resistance is...
I get it. Sam, take me home immediately.
I was thinking of my invention the next Friday, July 2nd, about 6 o'clock. I was up a pole near Bridges Run, hunting for a break where the party line went dead. I hooked in my linesman's phone, but I couldn't get central. I was just about to pull my phone and get down when... Hey, that's impossible. The line checked out dead. Hello, who's this?
Sam, this is you.
Huh? What's that?
This is you. You, Sam Yoder. Don't you recognize your own voice? This is you, Sam Yoder, calling from the 12th of July.
Look, Mac, I'm working and I'm 50 feet up.
Don't hang up.
I'm not hanging up, but you'd better. Now, wait a minute. Do I know you? The voice is familiar.
Sam, it's the 2nd of July where you are, and you're up a pole by Bridges Run. The line's dead in two places, or else I couldn't talk to you. Lucky, huh?
Whoever you are, it isn't going to be lucky for you.
But I'm you, and you're me. We're both the same Sam Yoder, only where I am, it's July 12th. Where you are, it's July 2nd. You've heard of time traveling? Well, this is time talking. You're talking to yourself. That's me. And I'm talking to myself. That's you. And it looks like we've got mighty good chances to get rich.
Look, I don't believe this.
All right, then listen. Do you remember the time you were out with Rosie at the drive-in movie over at the wing, and the couple in the convertible next to you were naked, and then Rosie...
Well, never mind what he said. It was something only me and Rosie would know about. No, nobody else in the whole world, so I knew he was me. I was he, him... We were the same. He told me what he wanted me to do, and then he told me where the brakes were in the line and hung up. Well, I cut loose down the pole, and my irons only hit it twice from the top to the bottom. I was sweating and shaking a little, and it didn't help any when I found the two brakes right where the voice said it would be. But that wasn't any more impossible than anything else. I called into Central and told him I was sick, which wasn't particularly untrue anyway. And then I went home and made myself a cup of coffee, and pretty soon I was muttering to myself, which I don't say now in order to make telling the story easy. But I do it all the time. Like this. You got a good cup of coffee here, Sam, old boy. Instant, but strong. Oh... Now, there isn't any weak-mindedness in my family, and the company psychologist said I grew up stable. Was it in a stable? Well, anyway. Nobody but Rosie knows I told her her nose is so cute I couldn't believe she ever had to blow it. Maybe it was me talking to myself. Donut, Sam, don't mind if I do. I talk to myself just sitting over coffee. Why shouldn't I talk to myself on the telephone? From the middle of next week. On a dead line. I wonder if that psychologist was right. More coffee, Sam? Just a little to hot it up. When? Now look, if somebody drove over to Rappahannock past Dunnsville and telephoned back that there was a brush fire at Dunnsville, I wouldn't be surprised to get to Dunnsville and find a brush fire there. So, if somebody phones back from next Tuesday that Mr. Broadus has broke his leg next Tuesday, why should I be surprised to get to next Tuesday and find out he'd done it? More coffee, Sam? No, thanks. I couldn't touch another drop. You see what I mean? Pretty soon I began to realize there was money in this thing, and I got to work on my invention, the one I meant to use for private calls on party lines. I got out the soldering iron and a bunch of components I liberated from the phone company, and I started to rearrange the circuits the way that voice on the telephone had told me to. It was a real breadboard job with wires hanging out of it like spaghetti, but finally I was done. I spliced my gadget onto my phone, then I broke the line to Central, rang it, and half a minute later... Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Sam. This is you in the 2nd of July.
You got it all fixed up, huh?
Yeah, it looks awful.
Well, that's okay. You can straighten it out later. Okay, Sam, now we get rich together.
Look, Sam, I want to ask you a few things about this gadget. Now, you know where those four transistors are hooked up bridging the...
Look, Sam, you mind if we don't go into that right now?
Yeah, but I want to know if I reverse the leads, will I...
Some other time.
Well, if you're too busy to talk...
I'll tell you, I am kind of busy right now. You'll understand when you get to where I am.
Look, I worked 6 hours on that thing because you said to it...
Don't get mad, Sam. I'll tell you what. You go see Rosie and tell her about this and have a nice evening. Ha-ha.
What do you mean, ha-ha?
You'll find out. Knowing what I know, I'll even double it. Ha-ha.
Ha ha. I went over to Rosie's house. Her old man was watching Diana Doors on the television, and her mother was watching her old man, so I took Rosie by the hand and led her out onto the porch. I could see the moon glinting off eyeglasses as all the neighbor ladies leaned forward in their porch rockers to watch us. I always felt a responsibility to those ladies, and usually I try to make it worthwhile to them staying up so far past their bedtimes. But tonight, I had other things on my mind.
Sam, you didn't slick down your cowlick. I've told you, if you go on a date without slicking down your cowlick, it shows you have no respect for the girl.
Rosie, forget my cowlick, huh?
I could go inside and get some mustache wax. Pa keeps it because his crew cut always goes limp when the humidity gets above 60%.
Rosie, will you listen to me? I've made up my mind to get rich. You ought to have everything your little heart desires. Now, suppose you tell me just what you want.
I want your cowlick to lie down so I won't be ashamed in front of the neighbors.
No, honey. Mink, chinchilla, a sports car, anything, whatever you want.
Do you feel all right?
Now, listen, honey. Nobody knows it, but tonight Joe Hunt and the widow Backus are eloping to North Carolina to get married. We'll find out about it tomorrow. And day after tomorrow, on the 4th of July, Dunnsville is going to win the baseball game with Bradensburg 7-5, all tied till the 9th inning, and then George Peeby is going to hit a homer with Fred Holmes on second base. There was a brief silence interrupted only by the sound of Pa's rocker going over as he tried to get a better angle on Diana Doors. I don't know how many times I've explained to him you can't improve on the view on a two-dimensional TV screen by craning your neck. But he says you can't overcome a lifetime of habit. Well, anyways, I explained to Rosie about Sam in the week after next telling me all these things and how we were going to get rich.
Sam, somebody was playing a joke on you.
Oh, yeah? Well, who else but me knows what you said that time you thought I was mad at you and you were crying down behind McHenry's ice house?
Sam, I told you when I read those words on that board fence, I didn't know what they meant.
And nobody else knows about the time we were picnicking and the bug got down the front of your sunbag dress and you thought it was a hornet.
Sam Yoder, you never told anybody about that.
No, but the me in the week after next knew. He told me, so he had to be talking to me. It couldn't be anybody else.
Sam, either you've told somebody else everything we ever said or did, or else there's somebody else who knows. That's awful.
But, honey, it's me.
This other person knows everything we say, even now?
Sure.
Sam Yoder, you go home.
But, honey...
Do you think I'm going to talk to you when somebody else listens to every word I say and knows everything I do? Do you think I'm going to marry you?
But, Rosie, it's just between the two of us. You, me, and me next week. Rosie! I stayed around till her father came out and asked me to go home so Rosie could finish crying and he could watch Hell's Angels on the Late Show in peace. On the way back to my house, I got madder and madder. Sam, in the week after next, could have warned me about this, the louse. Well, I plugged in my gadget and rang, but I guess there was nobody home on July 12th because there wasn't any answer. And there wasn't any that night when I got home from work, either. So I went around to see Rosie.
The only reason I'm talking to you, Sam Yoder, is that Pa's inside sneering at Dorothy Kilgallen on What's My Line, and I don't think it's polite.
Still mad at me?
I never was mad at you. I'm mad at whoever was talking to you on the phone and knows all our private secrets. And I'm mad at you if you told him.
But, honey, I didn't have to tell him. He's me. All he has to do is just remember. I tried to call him again last night and this morning, but he doesn't answer. Maybe he's gone off somewhere.
Do you think it's polite to sneer at Dorothy Kilgallen? She knows so many important people by their first names, lots of them even for short.
You think maybe it's all an illusion?
You told me last night there'd be an elopement, and there was. Joe Hunt and the Widow Backus, just like you said.
Well, could have been a coincidence.
I'm waiting to see if Dunsville beats Bradensburg 7-5 tomorrow.
Yeah, I bet $11 on it.
If that happens, I'll die.
Why, honey?
Because it'll mean that I can't marry you, ever. Because somebody else would be looking over your shoulder. And we would never be by ourselves all our lives, day or night.
The next day in the big 4th of July ball game, it was tied in the ninth. Then George Peavy hit a homer with Fred Holmes on second base and Dunsville beat Bradensburg 7-5. I collected my bet, but the $11 turned to ashes in my mouth. I didn't go over to Rosie's that night. I stayed home and kept trying to call myself up on that gadget that I told myself how to fix up. It was a moonlit night, the kind I usually spend with Rosie while her old man watches the million-dollar movie for the seventh time on TV, hoping that the ending will come out different. But there I was in the basement trying to call up the week after next, and nobody home. In the morning, I woke up suddenly. I thought it was the alarm clock, but it wasn't. Hey, I left the gadget on. Oh, wait, don't go away. Wait. Hello?
Don't get upset, Sam. Rosie's gonna make up with you.
How do you know what she's gonna do? She won't marry me with you hanging around. I've been trying to figure out a way to get rid of you.
Quiet. I'm busy. I gotta go collect the money you made for us.
You collect money? I get in trouble and you collect money?
I have to, or you wouldn't get it. Now listen, where you are, it's Wednesday. You're going over to Dunsville today to fix some phones. You'll be in Mr. Broadus's law office about 10:30. Now you look out of the window and notice a fella sitting in a car in front of the bank. Notice him good.
I won't do it. I won't take orders from you. Maybe you're me, but I make a bet and you collect it. For all I know, you spend it before I get to it. Now I'm quitting this business right now. It's cost me my girl and my peace of mind and the blazes with it.
Okay. Okay, Sam. Just wait and see.
The trouble with a story like this when you tell it is there isn't any suspense, like one of those old movies where a gypsy fortune teller tells George Raft he's going to be head gangster and fall in love and finally get shot by his best friend, played by Ralph Bellamy. And then the rest of the picture just goes like a local commuter train following a schedule. Well, sure enough, I was ordered over to Dunsville to fix the phones in Mr. Broadus's office. Well, at 10:30, I happened to look out of the window, and there, sitting in a car with the motor running, was a reddish-haired man. Then suddenly, two other men come running out of the bank carrying bags. Mr. Harrison, the guard, is shooting at them. And they're shooting back. And the car takes off like a big bird and shoots out of town. And Fred Hale comes tearing after him in the squad car right down Olympia Street. Unfortunately, Mrs. Monroe was turning left into the supermarket parking lot. She happened to be coming from the far right lane. And so the bank robbers got away clean with $35,000. They'd cut all the wires out of town where they crossed Goose Creek, and so they sent me right out to fix it. I was up the pole right next to the creek working and, like usual, talking to myself. Sam? Sam, do you realize what that was? A bank robbery. You, in the middle of next week, told you to come over here and watch a bank robbery, but you didn't tell yourself what for. You didn't tell yourself to stop it. Sam, that other you is a born crook. Then I realized it wasn't another me. It was me a week and a half later. If he was a born crook, so was I. Nothing could happen in a week and a half to change character like that. I couldn't even turn myself into the cops, because nobody would believe it. I suddenly realized I was an accessory before and after the fact of that bank robbery. And then I realized there was only one thing to do. That night, I drove over to Rosie's house. Her father had a jacket and tie on because he was expecting to visit Her Supreme Highness Princess Grace of Monaco and Slapsy Maxie Rosenblum with Ed Morrow face to face. I took Rosie out to the porch just as the princess invited Ed and Rosie's old man into a closet to see her shoes.
Sam, what's the matter? You look awful.
I am awful. Rosie, I come to tell you goodbye. I just found out I'm a criminal, so I'd better go and commit my crimes far away from hearth and friends who would be hurt.
Sam, what's happened now?
That bank robbery. I knew all about it before it happened. I called myself up and told myself, but I didn't let myself stop it. Don't you see? I'm an accessory both ways against the middle. I'm a criminal. So, Rosie, goodbye.
Sam, you sit right down.
Oh, it's in the blood, I guess, or the genes. What do you think of my case? It was environment rather than heredity.
Now, Sam, you haven't done anything yet. It's that other you.
But I'm going to have done something. I'm doomed to be a criminal.
Well, I'm going to reform you.
What?
I'm going to reform you before you start. I'm going to stay with you from now on, every place you go.
But, Rosie, I climb poles.
I'll wear my tapered slacks. You won't do anything criminal with me along. And if that other you starts talking to you on the telephone, I'm going to climb the pole and tell him where he gets off.
And that's just what she did. Wherever I went, Rosie went right along with me, carrying a 10-inch crescent wrench in case of emergencies, wearing her tapered slacks, which looked real good because, as a matter of fact, the slacks taper just a little more than Rosie does. Well, she made me stay over in her brother who was away in the Marines room and locked me in at night. It went on that way for a couple of days. Rosie looking grim all day, not even holding hands or playing footy in the diner over coffee. We spent the evenings in her living room while her father watched Meet the Press and asked Nixon and Kefauver questions that they never even answered. I complained to Rosie that we had all the disadvantages of being married a long time without the obvious advantages. But her father told me to keep quiet and stop interrupting Steve Allen. Well, finally, on the 11th of July, we were driving in the phone company truck, that Rosie was driving to make sure I didn't commit anything criminal like crossing the double white line or not stopping for a school bus.
Do you realize tomorrow is the 12th?
Yeah.
That's the day the other you called you up from, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I've kept you honest. If you turn into a hoodlum between now and tomorrow...
Rosie, look out, that car! Now, look what you did.
Is the other man hurt? He's getting out of the car.
Rosie, that hair. Rosie, that's the man who... Get down, he's shooting at us.
Why?
Well, he's the man I saw outside the bank. He's one of the bank robbers. Look out, he's coming this way.
He looks awful mad.
Why not? We smashed his getaway car. Rosie, get behind me. I'll protect you. The fella came up to us holding his gun and looking pretty upset. And he was just about to say something when Rosie reached over my shoulder and hit him on the head with her crescent wrench. I took a length of wire in my pliers and I had his hand spliced behind his back before he came to. We threw him in the back of the truck and took him into the sheriff at Dunnsville. He confessed right away and told where his buddies were hiding out. Rosie locked me up in her brother's room again that night, and then it all came clear to me. In the morning, Rosie came out on the truck with me again, and she was still trying to reform me. I let her come along, but inside I was grinning.
What are you sneering about, Sam?
I'm not sneering, I'm grinning. Rosie, do you realize there's a $5,000 reward for those robbers, and we get it?
Well, I'm still worried about that other you.
Oh. Well, we'll take care of that right now.
Sam, what are you doing?
Now, just a minute, honey. I gotta climb that pole.
Sam, what are you doing up there?
Well, I gotta make a call, honey. Hook up my little gadget. Now.
Hello, who's this?
Sam, this is you.
Huh? What's that?
This is you. You, Sam Yoder. Don't you recognize your own voice? This is you, Sam Yoder, calling from the 12th of July.
Look, Mac, I'm working and I'm 50 feet up.
Don't hang up. You see, it was me all the time. Here it was in the 12th of July, and I was talking to myself back in the 2nd of July, and it was the same conversation word for word.
Oh, Sam, then it was you all the time.
Uh-huh. Back in the 2nd of July, he's cussing me out just the way I did. And he'll fix this gadget up the way I just told him.
Then we still have our secrets.
Oh, sure, honey. I'll remember when I call me up tonight 10 days ago. I'm going to be very busy. And I won't want to waste time talking to myself a week and a half ago. Now, Rosie, what do you suppose I'll be doing tonight that would make me not want to waste time talking to myself 10 days ago? Hmm, Rosie?
Oh, Sam, we'll have all tonight to ourselves. There's a big spectacular in compatible color with Esther Williams, and Pa will spend the whole night twisting the dials trying to get the color right. He'll be furious.
But your set is black and white.
That's why he'll be furious.
Well, how do you like the nerve of me calling me up and interrupting me at a time like that? Well, it won't take long, honey. I haven't got too much to say to myself this time. Well, that's the way it went. Rosie and I got married. Like I say, I wouldn't believe this story if I was you. Of course, what with horse races and things like that, we're doing pretty well, but that could just be good luck. But folks around this part of the country don't want to bet with me. I am the only one in the country who won a bet that Don Larson would pitch a perfect no-hit, no-run game in the World Series. You see, I had a little advance information.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Of All Possible Worlds by William Ten, a story which demonstrates that changing the world is simple. The trick is to do it before you have a chance to undo it. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Sam, This Is You, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Murray Leinster and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Larry Haynes as Sam and Pat Hosley as Rosie. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. For eerie tales that set the scene for witches' flights this Halloween, hear Sleep No More tonight.
Thank you for listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAP.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.